coming in as Loeb. Milodyke centered it.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You guys put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get to it. Happy Monday. We are underway on this Monday, April 8th on Flames Talk. Welcome to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Steinberg and Vickers along with you on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts on this Monday. Hello, Vicks.
Hello, Patrick. How are we doing?
I am well. It's good to have you back. It's good to have you back on Flames Talk.
Good to be back.
We have missed you. Let's go inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. It's that time to stock up for the celebrations that matter with ingredients that help make memories. Visit Calgary Co-op where life's in store. And want to start this hour talking a little bit about Mr. 30 Goals, Yegor Sharangovich. His first 30-goal season in just his fourth NHL season. He was one of Calgary's two goal scorers in Saturday's 4-2 loss to Edmonton. Also, the first ever player from Belarus to score 30 in an NHL season. More on that a little bit later. But Sharangovich scores 30. He has had a breakout season for the Flames. He's going to finish with 60 or more points, it looks like, this year. And, Mr. Vickers, he's eligible for a contract extension starting on July 1st. And that is really interesting to me, knowing the season that Sharangovich just had. I believe that the idea was always to sign him to a longer-term deal, or at the very least, I don't know if it was set in stone, but I think when they signed him after acquiring him in June, they immediately signed him to that 2-year deal. I think the kind of thought was, if he has the season we're thinking he can have, we automatically want to have conversations about extending him in the summer. Well, I think, Vix, he's had the season that the Flames are looking him to have. And so I'm curious what you would like to see on an extension, if you're even interested in them going down the extension route with Yegor. I'm curious what the text line thinks at 960-960. What would or should an extension look like? Do you get them locked up longer term? Do you stay on a shorter term? I'm curious as to where you are, because this trade has been a straight up home run. Everything the Flames were hoping for on Sharangovich, I think, has come to pass, you know, right in front of your face. Like, it's a pretty on-the-nose trade. It's like Conroy and the pro scouting department had a pretty good idea of what they were getting when they acquired him in June. Because I'll always go back, because you and I make this joke all the time. The first, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes when we were sitting there the day before the draft at Redstone Arena, one or both of us hungover. We were sitting there breaking down that trade, and the text line at first was just savage. Like, this is the worst trade. If this is Conroy's work, we don't want this guy as GM. If this is what we're going to be seeing from Conroy, get him out of here. I'm like, goodness gracious, people.
Let it breathe.
It was like 10 minutes after the deal had been made, and it was already a full-on L. Guys, come on. They got a third-round pick, and they got a player that they felt could be a really nice fit for him going forward, for a guy who wasn't going to sign back in Calgary for anything more than like a 6-year deal, who's over 30 years old in a market that was not paying for a lot of 30-year-old players. I will still go back to it, and I think I'll pat ourselves on the back, because we're not always right. We're very rarely right. But on that day, one of the things, and then the text line did start to come around and start to push back on the very negative early on response. But you and I kept on talking about, look at the other deals that were made around there for other guys in that age range.
Foligno,
Taylor Hall.
Riley Smith included in that?
Yep. All those names moved, and the Flames got by far the best return for Tyler Toffoli. And I remember Craig Conroy talking to us on the line that day. And that was his first trade as GM of the Flames. And the things he said, we like that he can play all three forward positions. Check. Center, left,
Right. And he's done that.
All three. We like that he's a really good penalty killer. Check. He's been very good penalty killing, and he's chipped in with a lot of shorthanded offense. They've liked his two-way game when he's been on the wing. Check. And they felt like with his shot, a better opportunity on a team that had the opportunity there for him, they felt like that could really open the door and unlock some of the offense that we didn't see in his last year in New Jersey. And it looks like that's a check mark as well. They scouted this guy pretty well, it feels like. They're reaping the benefits of it right now. And this seems like the perfect guy to extend based on his age, based on the situation the team is in. This feels like the perfect time to try to get yourself a nice long-term extension that could pay off for you in the long run and maybe have yourself a nice cap number when your team is starting to come out of this retool and starting to become really competitive again.
The one thing I'll add, too, is a little bit of pedigree, and everybody will point to at that time the trade was made, he was coming off a 13-goal season where he was scratched in the playoffs, I believe it was. But when I say the pedigree, his rookie season, he only played 56 games, had 16 goals. But that's a 24-goal pace over an 82-game schedule. Sophomore season, 26-goal pace. Obviously, he had the dip last season. And again, things didn't go right for him. He wasn't a fit, so on and so forth. But then the Flames were able to get an asset valued at around a 13-goal or a 14-goal scorer. And suddenly, he's back up to producing more in line with what was season one and season two for him, and then some. Because, of course, he's a 30-goal scorer this season, getting the power play time. He's been a fixture on both special teams. As you mentioned, it's not just the fact that he's a 30-goal scorer. It's a guy that's on your top power play unit. It's a guy that penalty kills for you. You mentioned being able to play left, center, and right. He's able to play 200 feet. And then you layer on the fact that, okay, yeah, he's going to pop for you, and he has a history of being in the neighborhood of 25-plus goals a season. The fact that he's 25 now, will be 26 next season, will be 27 in 2 years. This is a guy that you can identify from every aspect whatsoever in terms of a core player that you would probably want to sign long-term. The question you have to answer is he a 30-goal scorer, or is he a guy that scored 30? Well, again, as a rookie, he had 24, played to a 24-goal pace. Pardon me, he didn't score a 24.
No, but over 82, 54,
his goals per game pace translates to 24. Sophomore translates to 26. And, of course, now he's broken out and officially can say he's a 30-goal scorer. So I think I'm more comfortable in the he's hit 30. Do you extend him? Yeah, because he's hit 30, but his previous seasons, he's shown that he can also score as well. Again, outside of last year where things clearly didn't pop for him.
Well, and I mean, I think now with four NHL years under his belt, I think we can point to this guy as being, you always have that conversation, right, about unsustainable shooting percentages or really accurate shooters. And I think through four seasons, Sharon Govich has shown us he might be the latter. Like some guys shoot at career double digits. You know, if the norm is somewhere in the like 8%, 8 to 9% range, sometimes it's a little bit lower than 8, sometimes a little bit higher than 7.5 to 8.5, somewhere in that range. If that's your 5-on-5 norm or just the overall NHL norm for shooting percentage, well, you know what? There's guys like Brock Besser. There's guys like Ovechkin. There's guys, and I'm not trying to compare Sharon Govich to even either of those guys. I'm just saying there are guys that shoot for their career at a higher level. Glenn Cross was always a really high shooter. Tongue was always a really high shooting percentage, guys. Sometimes you're just a really accurate shooter as opposed to riding the percentages. Well, this year, Sharon Govich is up over 18%. I think that's a little high, but his 2 years that you were talking about before his down year, 14 and 14.3%. I think it's pretty clear that, or at the very least, there's a lot to be said. Sharon Govich is just a really accurate shooter, and maybe the shooting percentage he's clipping at this year isn't as unsustainable as it would be for a lot of other guys. And with him getting more playing time here, more opportunity here, more power play time here, I think it's really unlocked just how lethal a shot this guy has. Would you go 6 years?
I would like to start at 5. Just knowing that he has one more year left remaining on this deal, which would be 6 years total. But I wouldn't necessarily call it a deal breaker to go six whatsoever. And again, if you pay him to be a 30-goal guy and he averages 25 like he has in three of his 4 years, you can probably live with that. Again, he touches both special teams, 200 foot, three positions. You can live with that. And if he scores 30 again, perfect. If he finds another level, because let's be honest, he's only played four seasons in the NHL. He's not necessarily a finished product at age 25 as it stands right now. If he finds another level, even better. So would I go six? Yes. Would I love five? That's probably more the wheelhouse that I'd be in. But if it takes six to get done, I don't know if I'd necessarily hesitate all that much.
I think six is the perfect wheel.
Okay.
It's
semantics. Steinberg, hey, that's my job.
Steinberg-Vickers semantics if we're arguing between six and five. But I think that carries him pretty much throughout his...
To 32, 33?
Yeah, that hits most of his prime years. And I don't think you're talking about it being a bad number at the back or him being completely washed or something like that at the back end of that 6 years. It opens him up to still get himself a nice deal in unrestricted free agency if that's what he wants at the end of a deal. Or it opens him up maybe to stick around on a shorter term deal with the Flames if that's the way things are going. And I just feel like I think the Flames still have a very good relationship with Dan Milstein, who feels like Milstein represents half the team right now. Sharon Govich, Vladar, Kuzmenko, Pospisil, Miramanov. Like, Milstein represents a good chunk of the Flames right now. And the Flames kept a pretty good relationship with him even after the Zadorov situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a good working relationship there. I think that the Sharon Govich side feels very happy with the way things went. Didn't like the opportunity that was being presented in Newark or New Jersey. And so comes here, gets that opportunity, got the contract without sight unseen, without playing a single game, got a 2-year contract. I think a 6-year deal. I think somewhere in the $5.5 million range. I don't think that's completely unfair. I really don't. And I think it's a really nice gesture from the Flames to say, hey, we see this guy as a core piece and we'd like to lock him up long term. I think if you're the Sharon Govich camp, that's the most security the player has ever had in his NHL career. He's getting a nice raise. I don't know. I think that's a really nice ballpark to be in if you're the Flames, because I don't think 30 goals and with this guy really coming out of his shell and where the team is going, I don't think it's unsustainable. I don't think it's something that we're going to only see once from a guy who, as you mentioned, has been on pace for 24 and 26 as a rookie and a sophomore in this league.
When you want to talk about security, this is would really be his first real sense of security, because, yeah, he signed the 2-year extension with Calgary immediately following that trade. But if he doesn't come out strong this year, or is just average, or he's another 13 goal and 76 game kind of guy, we're not having conversations about extending him. And who knows, maybe his 2-year deal is the 2-year tenure with the Calgary Flames and he's looking to kickstart again somewhere else. So when you want to talk about a 5 or a 6 year extension at $5.5 million, somewhere in that ballpark, that's really truly his first, I've made it and I can probably breathe comfortably. It's funny to say that about a player that has just scored 30, but if he doesn't come out of the gates the way he did, and I don't even want to say out of the gates because it did take him a good 10-ish games to sort of find his footing. Let's not forget he played on the fourth line at one point this season when they were trying to figure out how he was going to be integrated into the lineup. And that's not too long ago. And maybe he remembers that. Maybe he doesn't forget that. But signing a 5 or a 6 year extension is truly, in my mind, the first security you would have as a player, not speaking specifically about Sharon Govich, but a player in his situation, where if it doesn't hit in Calgary, you're looking elsewhere and you're wondering when that security is going to come. So it rewards the player, certainly. It rewards the team for taking the chance. I think somewhere in that 5 or 6 year, and we can, you know, offline negotiate the terms of the deal in terms of is it going to be 5 or 6. But I think it works for all parties involved just from the outside looking in.
And these are the type of deals that a team in Calgary's situation can sign. They have got cap flexibility right now, so they don't have to worry about, you know, being tight on the cap for the next 2, 3, 4 years. And then if all goes according to plan, They hit on a couple of draft picks, and when they're kind of ballpark target of fall 2027 for them to really starting to be hitting stride and to retool hits, and Sharon Govich is still a key player, and you've got him for 5.5, kind of midway through a contract. That's the type of deals that help you in getting to a better place. And it was very similar to the contract the Flames signed Rasmus Andersson to when he was really starting, a little bit younger, I grant you that, but as he was starting to move towards being a full-time NHLer, they were not a bona fide contender at the time, when they signed him to that six-year extension, and that's worked out really nicely for him. So, I don't know, these are the deals that you have to be willing to sign if you're a team looking to compete down the road. And you've got the best book on Sharon Govich. You've already proven to yourself that your scouting book on him was pretty accurate. So why not continue to trust that and see if you can't get him locked up long term and see if you can't get a nice deal and a nice cap number on the back half of that deal when you're hoping you're going to be a more competitive group?
I guess the question I would have from the player camp is, what is a 30-goal score worth after the cap jumps as it's going to jump this summer and potentially jumps again? And this, I'll give credit to you because I didn't think of this comparable, but Jared McCann's situation, he signed a 5-year, $25 million deal 2 summers ago after he scored 27 goals in 74 games for the Seattle Kraken. Of course, he followed it up last season with 40 goals. He's back down to about he's going to hit 30 again this year, I would suspect, with the Seattle Kraken. He's sitting at 28 through 75 games. But that was 2 years ago as well. So from a player perspective, I would go, is this what a 30-goal scorer is like post-cap jump? And is that enough from the player side? Because I'm just thinking, okay, if suddenly there's X number of dollars more to work with, of course, everybody's contract projects to be X number more when you're on the free agent market, and he'll be restricted. But at the will he be restricted when the 2-year extension?
Nope.
He's giving up UFA years as well. Thank you for that. So I wonder if that's enough from the player side, but I can see how it makes sense for both the player and the team to do something in the 5 or 6.
And look,
year range.
That's why I say ballpark at 5.5 million. I think that's a good ballpark, but to make it happen, maybe you have to go. Maybe you have to go 6, six times 6. I just think that ballpark makes a lot of sense if you're the Flames.
I think the relationship certainly makes sense for team and player to get them on what we would deem as a longer term extension. No question about it.
Yeah. And then the other question is, where does he fit for you best going forward? Is he better at center or is he better on the wing? And I think the Flames know the answer. I think I know my answer anyway. I think the Flames know the answer as well. I think they're looking for a center iceman in free agency, or maybe they're looking at one right now in Connor Zeri, who we talked about in the first hour of this Monday Flames talk. I think Sharon Govich on the wing, whether he's playing on his off wing or he's playing on the left side, regardless, I think it makes more sense. You get more out of him. He impacts the game more and helps your team more when he's playing on the wing. I think he's done an admirable job playing center since the Lindholm trade, but I don't think he's been as effective a player as he was on the wing, and I think it's taken away from his offense, and I don't think he is as strong enough a center that he's making up for it in other areas, right? Like, sometimes if you do that, well, the defensive game, like Lindholm, when Lindholm moved to the middle, that first year, his numbers came down, but
he was giving you more overall.
He was giving you a lot defensively, and you could count on him in a shutdown role. Sharon Govich, you had to really feed him offensive starts to not have him exploited.
Wasn't great at the dot.
Really struggled in the faceoff dot, and the offense fell off. He's not a play driver in the middle, but he is an impact player on the wing. And I just feel like if you could go get
Sean Monahan.
If you could go get another center iceman, maybe it's Zeri. Maybe Zeri is the guy that they see. Maybe he shows you here in this final 6-game stretch and in training camp next year that he's the option. But find another 3C for next year. You've got Backlund. You've got Kadri. Have somebody else play as that third center iceman, whether it's a free agent signing or somebody internally, and let Sharon Govich be a winger. That's the way I look at it.
You're not going to get too much of an argument out of me because I think he is most productive, certainly on the wing, whether that's on the left side or the right side. I don't have the splits between how productive he's been on the left versus the right, but I think overall his ability to impact the game, and I think his best asset at doing that is his shot and is his offensive awareness. I think he's much more free to use his best skills on the wing than he is down the middle when he's, for lack of a better term, bogged down with having more of a 200-foot responsibility. He's still a strong 200-foot player when he's on the wing, but his focus and attention, I think, needs to be heightened more when he's playing down the middle. That's why I would almost like to free him up from that responsibility and let him be more of a dynamic offensive winger as opposed to playing down the middle.
Just a few texts first at 960-960. This says, quick question, why would he sign for 5 or 6? Security. Like that's a career maker. That gives you 6 years of knowing exactly what things look like. That's why he would.
On top of that, though, if you prove over that 5 or 6 year contract that you're an effective 30-ish goal guy, you're still hitting unrestricted free agency again at 32 or 33 and have a chance to cash in on another deal as well.
And I think that's why I say, like, the Sharon Govich camp may not be as keen on the max term. I think they'd be keener on that 5 to 6 middle ground because of that, to your point. This says, Mike from Calgary says 6x6 for him. He's worth it. This says, Pat, I'd sign him to a 3-year extension. I wouldn't have like a problem with that. I just think you've got a really good opportunity here to hit it and get yourself some nice value on the back end. This says Sharon Govich has been a pleasant surprise. Good on Conroy and company for the find, but this team has to be careful. They don't want another Matt Stajan-like contract where a guy slots so high in the lineup due to the team's poor depth. This says sign Sharkey to 6x5. I'd be great with that. This reads at 960-960. So is Sharon Govich not worth the same as Huberto? He has more goals and points and is younger. What do you say when his points when he points this out to management? I think they say that.
Oops.
Yeah, Huberto signed after 115 points. When you get 115
with
points,
a previous GM as well.
With a previous GM. That's also true. This says at 960-960, $5 million times 7 for Sharon Govich. 7 might be a little too long. I think 5 or 6 is the nice sweet spot for him.
Well, I think it benefits the team, but it also benefits the player again. When you're coming off of that expiring contract, you have one more cut, one more swing at landing a high AAV deal. If, of course, you still have to do something over the course of that 5 or 6 year contract to warrant it coming out of it, but it does set the player up pretty nice as long as he is remaining productive.
Quick side note, as I mentioned off the top, Sharon Govich now the first player ever from Belarus to score 30 goals in an NHL season. Also 3 points away from having the most points ever in a season from a Belarusian player. That record is held by, can you want to, don't look at the script. Do you want to take a guess?
Yeah, but his name is slipping.
Who do you play for?
Well, I play for a couple of different teams. Am I not mistaken? It's no, nope, because I was thinking Plekanec, but he's Czech.
It's Mikhail Grabowski.
You know, I wonder if that...
Is that who you're thinking about? Grabowski had 60 points with the Leafs in 2010-2011. Right now, Sharon Govich at 58. So he's already got the most goals ever for a Belarusian player in a season. 3 points away from having the most points ever with 6 games to go. And his fellow countryman, Ilya Solovyov, is back up with the team. Got recalled on Monday and was asked about that by our buddy Danny Austin. Was asked about Sharon Govich hitting that mark.
Of course, it's a Belarusian guy. Right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the first guy who scored 30 goals in the NHL. It makes me happy too. Like, you know, when I read it, yeah, I write him a message like to say congrats. Said the same thing today when I saw him in the locker room. I believe he can he'll break another record for points. He needs probably 3 points. I believe he can do it and be the first Belarusian guy who got 60 points season.
Is he a big deal back home?
Probably, yeah. Like everybody watch on him like right now. He's I don't know how to say it in English, but the young guys look at him and they want to be like Sharon right now, you know, like they want to play in the NHL, they want to score 30 goals in the NHL. Yeah, so he's a huge man right now in Belarus, you know, like especially for hockey guys.
Yegor Sharangovich, huge man in Belarus. That's his buddy Ilya Solovyov, also from Belarus, talking about that Monday morning. That's your look inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. Flames fans, meet Calangary. Top products curated for Calgarians, and we mean every single one of you. Only available at Calgary Co-op. Visit them today.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for a Monday edition of your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly cleaned car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish at Steinberg. Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. You know, Willsy, we just spent the first half of this hour talking about Yegor Sharangovich and what a contract extension might look like. And one of the things that factored into the conversation was who would be that number three center going forward for the Flames. Well, Connor Zeri filled that role Saturday after returning to the lineup after missing one as a healthy scratch and looked really good. Small sample size, one game, but really held his own play in center, went head-to-head with the Ryan McLeod line for the most part on Saturday. And I know it's just one game, but gents, how curious are we about the long-term fit of Zeri down the middle?
I'm curious. He's a young player. I think it's generally easier for young guys to get started in the NHL playing on the wing. And I would say that maybe applies more so to Flames players than players on some teams in the league, because the Flames, as we talked about a lot in the first half of the season, you know, changed up their D-zone system this season. And there's a lot of responsibility on the plate of the centerman. So I think it was a perfect formula for the Flames to allow Connor Zeri in his first NHL season to get comfortable in the league, playing on the wing. And if they were still in the fight for a playoff spot, I'm convinced he would still be playing on the wing, but they're not, and it's a good time to experiment. And I thought Saturday's experiment, if you want to call it that, in the Battle of Alberta against the Oilers went really well. It was the best, in my opinion, that Connor Zeri has looked since he came back from his injury. And I suspect being a healthy scratch and having a fire lit under him by Ryan Huska after not playing on Thursday probably was a factor in how good he looked on Saturday. But I also wondered if he would be in over his head playing against a speedy and skilled Oilers team. And I know it was 3-4, and I know it was the second half of a back-to-back. And I suspect the Oilers would probably tell you they weren't at their best on Saturday night. But you know, still a good hockey game, played with pace, played with physicality, and he didn't look out of place playing at center. And I thought he did a much better job than he had been doing, holding pucks, making plays. I thought he looked good without the puck. So again, small sample size, one game, but there was enough there for me on Saturday night to want to see more. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, for me, this is the time to tinker if you're the Calgary Flames on all fronts, whether it be, okay, working in Dustin Wolf more, whether it's Connor Zeri playing down the middle, whether it's getting a look at some young guys on defense, what have you. And the thing with Connor Zeri is, yeah, he did look good down the middle against the Edmonton Oilers. There's no denying that. And I kind of open-endedly questioned, did he look good because he was playing down the middle, or did he look good because he was coming off a healthy scratch and wanted to make a more positive impression? And I think the answer lies somewhere in the middle. But again, this is the time for the Calgary Flames to explore what they have at all positions. If there's a question of whether a guy can play down the middle that's currently played on the wing, then absolutely you take a look at that. And you just, anything that you kind of want to use over the next six games and rolling it back to the Oilers game, there were seven games remaining at that point. You go ahead and you explore. And if you find that Connor Zeri, who was drafted as a center from the Kamloops Blazers of the Western Hockey League, does have what it takes over this small sample size that makes you go, in training camp next year, maybe we're going to start him down the middle and see how he fares then yeah, this is absolutely the time to explore. All the positive stats that were laid out and will be laid out by Pat, I assume, from that game down the middle against the Oilers, all speak to, at the very least, you try this again. And if it doesn't go well, I still think you go back and you try it again, because this is something you need to explore as an organization, who are going to be your centers going forward.
Yeah, I just think it's worth it down the stretch to, and you're not going to, guys, like, by no means do I think that you'll get a definitive answer here between now and the end of the regular season. That would be seven relatively meaningless games playing out the string. And you always have to be cautious of how much you put in, how much stock you put into those games. But that doesn't mean they're not valuable either. And I think it's a valuable it's a valuable evaluation tool just to see where he's at. And gents, I think you've got two really great opportunities on the road against playoff-bound teams here in Los Angeles on Thursday, and then next week in Vancouver. Those are the nights I really want to see Zeri down the middle, because you can bet both the Kings and the Canucks would be saying, hold on a second, rookie playing center, let's throw one of our, like, the Kings and Canucks are both deep enough that on home ice, they would have no problem throwing out a Pedersen or Miller line against Zeri, or the Kopitar, or one of the other top
Dano,
two.
Maybe.
Yeah, like one of those two lines out against them, and see how the young man handles it, and see if they can exploit a rookie. You know what? As I said in the first hour, Wilsey, if Rick Tocchet decides to go the JT Miller line head-to-head against Connor Zeri, and Miller eats his lunch, oh well. Like, what a great development tool to say, holy, that's what it takes to play against a high-end center in this league, and you take that into the offseason when you're working, when you're evaluating your game, when you're training, when you're going into next offseason, all that type of stuff. And if he does well, also, that's great. That's a really, I just think there's a really cool opportunity here, because this is a guy that potentially factors in as a center for you long-term. So I'm really curious to see this, because I do think there's long-term potential. I don't know if it ends up going that way, but I do think there's some long-term potential there.
Yeah, me too. And for me, Connor Zeri at center makes much more sense than Martin Pospisil at center, at least right now. And I said the same thing about Sam Bennett when he was with the Flames, a guy who was a natural centerman, but played primarily on the wing. And the reason I liked him on the wing was because he played with pace, he played with physicality, and I think you can use those tools more effectively as an up-and-down-the-ice winger, which is what I think Ryan Huska basically said about Martin Pospisil today. And I think you might take a little bit of that away from him if you put him at center and put more defensive responsibilities on his plate. So, yeah, Connor Zeri's a guy who I think his game probably does translate better to center than Martin Pospisil does for me, at least at this stage of their careers. So, yeah, I've seen enough. I want to see more. Now, I guess looking ahead to next season, what do the Flames do? What do they do during the offseason? What are their goals next season? If their goals are to be competitive again, and I'm not saying competitive for a Stanley Cup, but competitive for a playoff spot, do you want to go into next season with Connor Zeri penciled in at center? Maybe, maybe not. I say maybe because, well, let's say that doesn't work out. Well, you've still got a guy in Yegor Sharangovich who has proven that he can play at a high level both at center and on the wing this season. So, you know, if you have him penciled in on the wing, you could always slide him back to center if Zeri at center didn't work, and then you can move him back to the wing. But if this team potentially wants to try to compete for a playoff spot next year, maybe both of those guys are a plan B or a plan C. And during the offseason, they make a trade for a centerman who would be a top nine guy for them, or they sign a guy who's an unrestricted free agent who would be a top nine guy for them. And then I would say that Zeri and Sharangovich become backup plans. If you lose a guy to injury, if a guy's not playing well, maybe you feel comfortable moving those guys from the wing back to center. So it really depends. It's going to be a super interesting offseason. But hey, like you said, Pat, a good time for the team to experiment mm-hmm. and see what they've got in Connor Zeri as a rookie at center, and also a great learning experience for Zeri, because there are different responsibilities that come with playing up the middle. And I thought he handled them well against a really good Oilers team on Saturday night.
It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills with Aaron Vickers and Pat Steinberg on this Monday edition of Flames Talk. Gents, a recall. I believe it's an emergency recall per cap friendly. Ilya Solovyov up on emergency recall. So the Flames still have their two regular recalls available to them. But Solovyov up and Oliver Shillington day-to-day with an upper body injury. Solovyov practiced on a regular pairing on Monday at practice with Braden Pahal on his right side. How do we think, and not going forward this season, but longer term, into next season and beyond, guys, how do we see Solovyov factoring in here for the Flames?
Tough question for me to answer, Pat, because I do think that the Flames are probably going to add to their blue line. Now, first of all, it makes sense that it's an emergency recall because right now you're down two defensemen. You're down Joel Hanley, who I thought was playing pretty well, especially in a role I wasn't sure I expected to see him play in after he was picked up off of waivers, and you're down Oliver Shillington. So the emergency recall makes some sense, but it really depends on who the Flames add between now and the start of next season. Do they continue with the youth movement? If so, then I think Ilya Solovyov probably goes into training camp in the preseason next year, fighting for a spot on this team, whether it be as a third pairing guy or maybe a number seven defenseman. But for me, it really depends on what the Flames do during the offseason. But again, as we just talked about with Connor Zary, gaining some experience playing at center down the stretch here, what a great opportunity for Ilya Solovyov to gain some more experience playing in the NHL. And I loved hearing from Ryan Huskett today because he was asked what the message was when Solovyov was sent back to the Wranglers the last time. And he said he kept it pretty simple for his player. Work on your first pass. And it's just so important. And I think we've seen since they were traded just how good both Noah Hanifin and Chris Tanev were at either making a really good first pass or skating the puck out of the defensive zone. Because let's be honest, the team's had a tougher time getting out of there and getting up the ice and going on offense without those two guys. So I'm anxious to see. It sounds like based on what both Huska and Solovyov said today, the player went down, worked on some things, including being a better first passer. So let's see if that translates from the AHL to the NHL. But I like the tools he's got. He's got good size, plays with some physicality, skates pretty well for a big guy. So anxious to see how he looks in this latest stint with the Flames.
Pat, if you'd asked me this question at the beginning of the year, it seemed, at least from the outside perspective, that Solovyov was kind of the heir apparent or the next man up in terms of a prospect defenseman being elevated, or making the jump. But the Flames have really made an effort to bolster their defensive depth, just even in terms of guys knocking on the door at the pro level. You just run through the list. Danil Miromanov, Nikita Okhochuk, Braden Pahal, Artem Grushnikov all have various levels of pro experience, and things have gotten a lot more competitive in that pool. And that's not counting Jeremy Poirier, Hunter Brustovich. That's not counting Joni Jarmo, who has pro experience in Finland. So suddenly you are going through the prospect pool or the players that are currently up with the Calgary Flames that kind of skew a little bit younger, going, this is a much more competitive pool than it was, I would suggest, 6-7 months ago. And for a player like Solovyov, that is both a challenge and perhaps maybe even an encouraging thing, where you're looking at the situation going, well, now I know this job has just gotten a little bit harder, so now I need to get on my horse, for lack of a better metaphor, in order to make sure that I am one of those next guys up, that when training camp rolls around next season, I am putting myself in a position to be one of those first guys. It's a much more competitive pool on the back end than it's been recently, when the Calgary Flames have had, you know, their five or six players that were set and forget on the blue line, and then it made it really tough for any defenseman to come up. Well, now you're down Hanifin, you're down Tanev. There's opportunity to be had. Ilya Solovyov is one of those defensemen that are going to be given a look and will be given a look in the sort of short duration that's remaining this season. But it's really going to be incumbent on him to make sure he continues to take the steps, like we talk about the puck moving ability. He has to continue to take the steps to make sure that he's a guy that's one of those in consideration for a roster spot come October.
Honestly, guys, I think it would actually be, I think the Flames would be disappointed if Solovyov was not kind of pushing for, clearly pushing for, if not had solidified himself a spot on the opening day roster next year. And I say that because I know Conroy and this Flames management group are big fans of him as a player. They feel like he's been knocking on the door for a little while now. And I think now we're talking about a guy who was drafted in 2020 and has 3 years in the American League under his belt now. This is year three of him playing full-time in the AHL. I think he's now graduated to a point where you're okay. Turns 24 in July. You're okay with him going from being, like, there's always that time where you go from being prospect who needs to play or guy who can now fit in and be a depth player at the NHL. And while there's no perfect science to it, there's kind of that threshold where I think maybe you cross into, yeah, it's okay. I think personally with the type of player Soloviev is, I think it's okay next year after 3 full years in the American League if he ends up being in that 6-7 mix for the Flames, where he's not necessarily playing every single game, but he's still getting some games in and he's still practicing at an NHL level every single day. Like, I think he's now in that spot where you'd be okay with that organizationally. And I think that's where the Flames would like him to be next year. And, you know, Wilsey, you're right. It all depends on how the Flames decide to go about their business on the blue line. I think they'll try to sign another NHL defenseman to try to round out their top four next year. But if the top four, so player X, who they might sign, Anderson, Uyghur, Shillington, well, you're still looking at 3 spots to fill. And I don't know if, okay, Miramanov will be there as well. He's signed. So there you got, you've got 5 that would be in that mix. So 2 spots to fill. And I don't know if it's a guarantee that Hanley's there. Hanley's been fine for him, but that doesn't mean that he's guaranteed a spot going into training camp because he was kind of straddling American League, NHL time prior to coming here. And I don't know if Ochocinc is guaranteed a spot on the NHL roster. These guys are all on deals where they'd be okay if they had to play in the American League, like we've seen from Jordan Oesterle this year. So I think the expectation will be for Soloviev to come to camp next year and fight for a 6-7 role on the team and see if he can get that done. Definitely what happens here down the stretch and him getting some more NHL time, that's definitely not going to hurt him, that's for sure.
Well, and it's big for him because he is a pending RFA.
Yeah.
So they've still got to get him under contract for next season, which I suspect they will. But the way I see it, guys, and maybe you look at it a little bit differently, can we all agree that we expect Oliver Shillington, who's a pending UFA, to be back?
Yes.
Okay. So if that's the case, and just for the sake of this conversation, let's say Craig Conroy doesn't go at a guy who would be guaranteed to be in his top six. I still think you've got 5 of your top 6 spots filled. So you've got Mackenzie Uyghur, Rasmus Anderson, Oliver Shillington, Daniil Marimanov, and I think Braden Pahal has done enough to be on this hockey team. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, probably. I probably didn't include he probably has, although I still wonder what things look like at training camp. I still wonder if that's a spot that could be up for grabs. But no, I think Pahal's done a pretty admirable job of stepping in and giving them some physical minutes in that third right-hand shot spot on the blue line.
And if you do go at a guy in free agency who's clearly a top 5 guy, maybe he's your 6 or your 7, which wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But I think expecting Soloviev to come to training camp and play in the preseason and compete for a spot, I think that is fair, and that would be my expectation for him. I just think it's also going to be a battle for him because you've got plenty of competition for that spot, in my opinion. You look at some guys playing for the Wranglers right now, Jeremy Poirier. I've got to believe that he's going to have the mindset that he's going to be fighting for a spot next season. Hunter Bristrevich, with the junior career he's had, I'm guessing he's going to come to training camp and play in some preseason games, and he's going to think he's got a chance to win a spot on this team. Now he's a young player. You can start him in the AHL. That's certainly an option for him. I would say the same about Artem Grushnikov, who, based on what I've heard and read, is maybe a little green, a little rougher around the edges. So I'm not sure I expect him to be a full-time NHLer next season. So there's going to be plenty of competition, assuming the Flames don't move any or more defensemen out. We'll have to wait and see if they bring someone in. If they do, then you might have like 5 or 6 guys fighting for one or two spots. I think your top four looks pretty good as it is. Maybe in a perfect world, Nurmagomedov's playing in your third pairing instead of in your top four, but I think he's got a ton of upside. So how it plays out, but Craig Conroy's done a good job kind of stocking the cupboards again, because for a while they looked pretty bare as far as defensemen were concerned.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this offseason goes and what type of additions they look to make at both forward and defense. Before then, though, we got six games to go. We'll see how many games Solovyov gets in before he rejoins the Wranglers for the American League playoffs. For now, Mr. Wills, have a wonderful rest of your Monday. We'll chat again on Tuesday. Looking forward to the Flames and Sharks and maybe a Dustin Wolf appearance in his hometown, which would be pretty cool as well. Have a good rest of your Monday, Mr. Wills. Thank you, pal.
Yeah, it certainly sounds that way. And super excited about the 8:30 Mountain Time start in San Jose tomorrow. Looking forward to calling that game against the Sharks. Have a good night, guys.
Bye, Willsy. Part of that was sarcastic. I know that.
You picked up on that as well?
Well, you know how I feel about midweek 8:30 starts myself. They are what they are. Time zones exist. It's a privilege to do what we do. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. There's your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish as we start to wrap things up on this hour of Flames Talk. Spent the first hour talking about a Yegor Sharangovich potential contract extension. See how that might play itself out over the summer and what a number could look like. And then our Daily Flames Roundtable talking Zeri and Solovyov. Mr. Vickers, have a wonderful rest of your Monday. We'll talk to you Tuesday.
You betcha, buddy.
Thanks to Cam and Azam, our producers this hour. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.